From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, new numbers in the Ebola outbreak. Latest on the pro-democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong. U.S.-Russia relations on the agenda in Paris, plus a call for a stimulus to spur the EU economy. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The World Health Organization says the number of cases in the West Africa Ebola outbreak will top 9,000 this week. Official death toll now standing at more than 4,445, believed to be a conservative figure. The WHO gave an update Tuesday on the Ebola crisis. VOA's Joe DiCapua has details.
The briefing was led by Dr. Bruce Alward, WHO Assistant Director General in charge of the operational response to the Ebola outbreak. He says 95% of the cases are reported in 19 of the 67 districts, counties, or prefectures in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, a figure that's held fairly steady for the past month.
If we look at the reported number of cases over the last 4 weeks, and we take seven-day blocks for which we have full data, it's been running about 1,000 cases a week now for about 3 to 4 weeks. A couple of people have looked at that and said, well, what's going on? Is the epidemic slowing down, or are we not seeing the exponential growth? And quite frankly, it's too early to say, because as most of you know, the numbers go up and down. The labs sometimes can't keep up with the amount of specimens they're getting.
Another reason is health officials may be overwhelmed by the paperwork involved in tracking the epidemic. Dr. Alward says there are some positive trends.
One is a slowing down in the rate of new cases in some areas in what's been the historic epicenter, Lofa County, Liberia. In both Kenema and Calhoun, it's been slowing down over the last couple of weeks as well. Now, as some of you also know, though, in Gekedu, right across the border, we've seen the disease go up and down as well. But as we talk to our teams on the ground there and teams from other organizations, there's a lot of information that suggests that this is the result of real change in the behavior or the approach of communities most often.
That behavior change includes a large increase in the number of safe burials. However, the WHO official has a warning for those who may say there are now just a few cases in those areas.
Well, that's like saying you're only a little bit pregnant, you know. This is Ebola. This is a horrible, unforgiving disease. You've got to get to zero.
To stop Ebola, he says, you need thorough tracing of those who may have been in contact with Ebola victims. Same-day isolation, among other things. Alward says, after visiting the region recently, he also saw some disturbing trends. One is that the disease is expanding geographically.
Looking at a map where they're coming up, because they're on the border areas as well, with Cote d'Ivoire in particular. We're seeing some additional areas reporting cases that we hadn't. So that's concerning, just that geographic expansion.
Alward says every district in the three worst affected countries must have full control over burials, case management, and behavior change. That's not the situation yet. He also says there is still a lack of what he calls real crisis management.
It's tough in crisis because, as you know, it's one thing if you're running a military and you have a command and control structure. It's another thing when you're running an awful lot of partners that are funded different ways, they have different accountabilities, etc., and you have to get them to common purpose. But there are things that can be done. Every country has got an emergency operating center or something to that effect. Often it's a meeting, everybody gets around the table, says what they're doing, and you know what? I don't care. What I care about is, here's what has to be done. Is someone doing all of those? And does this all fit on the critical path that gets you to zero?
The UN Mission for Ebola Emergency Response, UNMIR, recently unveiled a strategy to reverse the upward trend in Ebola cases. It's called the 70-70-60 Plan. The aim is to have the training, treatment, and logistics in place so there can be 70% safe burials and 70% of suspected cases isolated in 60 days. He admits, however, that will be a difficult target to reach. The WHO Assistant Director General says while there is plenty of bleak news, there are some bright spots, including the ramping up of the international response. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
At the UN on Tuesday, the head of the United Nations Ebola mission in West Africa said he's deeply, deeply worried that everything being done to fight the outbreak is not enough to stop it. Anthony Barbary spoke to the Security Council via video link from Ghana.
Ebola got a head start on us. It is far ahead of us, it is running faster than us, and it is winning the race. We cannot let Ebola win. For if Ebola wins, we, the people of the United Nations, lose so very much. We lose things that we cannot lose. We cannot let that happen.
Barbary said that Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has ordered his Ebola mission not to get slowed down by talk or by red tape. The Security Council also heard Tuesday from three West African ambassadors whose countries are at the epicenter of the outbreak. They are Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Liberia's ambassador, Marjan Kamara, said her people have called guarded optimism because of the world's attention and the determination to fight that disease. And Liberia's transport minister has voluntarily isolated herself in her home after her driver died of Ebola. Country's chief medical officer put herself in isolation 2 weeks ago after an office assistant died of the virus. Meantime, Liberian healthcare workers ended a 2-day strike over hazard pay and improved working conditions. More than 90 health workers have died of the disease since March. In Sierra Leone on Tuesday, security forces clashed with Freetown residents who protested the government's slow response in removing a corpse of a suspected Ebola victim lying on the street. William Sao Lamin is a Freetown resident.
You can call the 117 and the contact tracers for the rest of the day. You can't see them. So what the youth are now doing is they can block the streets, and then at the end of the day, when authorities are moving around, they can now call those who are concerned and actions can be taken.
Meanwhile, a member of Sierra Leone's army unit preparing for peacekeeping duties in Somalia has been diagnosed with Ebola. The contingent is being monitored and their deployment delayed. South Africans working for Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, are calling on their fellow citizens to support efforts to stem the Ebola outbreak. Jillian Parker covers MSF's call to action in Johannesburg.
The message from MSF is a simple one. The international community is failing the people of West Africa. MSF says that despite promises from various countries to help stem the deadly virus, to date, few pledges have translated into concrete action on the ground. Sharon Eckenbaum, head of a MSF South Africa unit, says that there are critical gaps in all aspects of the response.
And so the spread of Ebola continues unabated as the response fails to curtail and bring down new infections. MSF is really angry that the world and the international community is failing the people of Sierra Leone, Guinea and Liberia. It is hard to understand, to be frank with you, the media frenzy about individual contaminations of people in the USA and in Europe. Rich nations have the resources to contain the spread of Ebola if it reaches their shores. It is the people of the impoverished communities in West Africa that are at highest risk of infection and death.
Launching a new campaign called Tough Decisions in Johannesburg Tuesday, MSF staff working in Ebola centres in the three affected countries candidly appealed to South Africans for financial and skills support. Jens Petersen, Humanitarian Affairs Advisor, said that the people, organisations and states that have promised support should be held to account.
Because MSF is one of the main respondents to this Ebola outbreak, and because there has been no real response on the ground as of yet, of course, we are burning our candles in both ends. We are carrying an immense burden which forces us to stretch ourselves very, very thin.
Dr. Julie Swatala, a MSF paediatrician who was working in Sierra Leone before the outbreak, explained how a lack of resources is forcing them to turn away people showing symptoms of the virus from treatment centres, only to be sent back to their families to die and infect others. The affected countries, she says, were already fighting against malaria, severe malnutrition and HIV/AIDS with inadequate medical facilities. The health system in Sierra Leone is collapsing, she said.
Ebola is forcing us to make some very tough decisions. Not every death that's from Ebola is actually caused by Ebola. In other words, more people are dying from malaria because of Ebola. More women are dying in childbirth because of Ebola. And until we sort out Ebola, we cannot get back to sorting out the stuff that we need to.
The cost to deal with the virus is monumental, with MSF estimating that each clinic visit costs around $20. With little or no pharmaceutical industry in a country like Sierra Leone, medical supplies and protective suits have to be imported. Medical staff can only work for an hour or so at a time under layers of protective gear in the sweltering tropical heat. Most of the protective gear has to be incinerated. Those who die of Ebola are washed in chlorine, wrapped into body bags, and disinfected again before being buried. MSF say factories have been opened in Asia to begin to satisfy the demand of protective suits. But MSF says they are still waiting for all the world to swing into action. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And in the U.S. on Tuesday, President Obama called on the world to do more to fight Ebola.
There are a number of countries that have capacity that have not yet stepped up. Those that have stepped up, all of us are going to have to do more because unless we contain this at the source, this is going to continue to pose a threat to individual countries.
And the head of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Rajiv Shah, said the United States is sending another $142 million to West Africa to fight Ebola, including $65 million to Liberia. U.S. has committed more than $400 million to battling Ebola in West Africa so far. Also Tuesday, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced it's setting up an Ebola response team. Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the CDC, spoke with reporters about who the team will serve.
For any hospital anywhere in the country that has a confirmed case of Ebola, we will put a team on the ground within hours with some of the world's leading experts in how to take care of and protect healthcare workers from Ebola infection.
Nina Pham, a 26-year-old Vietnamese-American, became the first person infected by Ebola in the United States while caring for a Liberian man, Thomas Duncan, for much of his 11 days in a Dallas, Texas hospital where he died last Wednesday. Dr. Frieden Tuesday spoke about Pham's case of contracting the disease from Duncan.
Since the nurse did develop infection, we can't rule out that other people who cared for the individual, the first patient, the index case, had exposure. Our teams have been working very hard to cast a wide net and identify everyone who might have been exposed in that circumstance. That includes anyone who went into the room, and that includes people who might have handled specimens of blood that were taken from him. At this point, the team has identified 76 individuals who might have had exposure to the index patient. Of those 76 individuals, all will be monitored for fever or symptoms on a daily basis, actively.
Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. VOA is following the Ebola crisis with special reporting on our website, voanews.com. You should check it out.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
United States and Russia are vowing to cooperate more closely on a broad array of global security matters, even as they remain deeply at odds over the crisis in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met for more than 3 hours in Paris on Tuesday. After the meeting, Mr. Kerry spoke with reporters.
Foreign Minister Lavrov and I came together here to discuss a broad array of issues and to try to find a way to recognize that where there are differences, we try to manage those differences, but that we have major responsibilities together and that our countries have an ability to be able to cooperate and work together.
And Mr. Lavrov had a similar sentiment. Said on the whole range of issues, we can cooperate better to increase effectiveness or settling problems for larger society. He said that especially concerns the fight against terrorism, which has now become a main threat in the whole of the Middle East, he said, and North Africa. And in his comments, Secretary Kerry did not use the word reset, which the Obama administration's first term used regarding efforts to improve ties with Russia. But he employed similar language about managing the U.S.-Russian differences and forging better cooperation on shared concerns. Differences over Ukraine clearly persist. Mr. Kerry said he and Mr. Lavrov discussed the situation in Ukraine at length, especially the upcoming elections.
I emphasized to Foreign Minister Lavrov that the only legitimate elections in Ukraine are the Rada elections on October 26th and the December 7th elections of local leaders in the Donbas special status zone. And in our judgment, any efforts to hold independence referenda in Luhansk and Donetsk at this time would be a violation of the Minsk agreements, and the results will not be recognized by Ukraine or by the international community.
Mr. Lavrov also spoke with reporters about what's happening in Ukraine. He said, Mr. Kerry and I don't represent warring sides. As I said already, the settlement of the Ukrainian crisis is only possible via direct talks under agreements between the conflicting sides. Secretary Kerry said Russia and the rebels it backs should halt violence in eastern Ukraine, pull back its forces and weapons, and release any hostages. Europe's largest economy, Germany, slashed its growth forecast, and France facing growing calls to cut spending amid fears Europe may sink back into recession. From Paris now, Lisa Bryant reports EU finance ministers are calling for a stimulus spending to revive the region's sluggish growth.
European Union finance ministers wrapped up 2 days of talks in Luxembourg, calling for greater investment to boost the bloc's struggling economies. Economy Minister Piercarlo Padoan of Italy, which holds the bloc's rotating presidency, spoke to reporters after the meeting.
There is a broad agreement, a general agreement, on the fact that investment is one of the three pillars of the growth strategy of the European Union, the other two being structural reforms and growth-friendly fiscal consolidation. And structural reforms, by improving the business environment, is a main way forward in generating profitable projects by facilitating investment.
The 18-member Eurozone region, which only emerged from recession last year, risks being dragged down again, partly because of the economic problems of heavyweights France and Germany. On Tuesday, the German government sharply cut its growth forecast for this year and next, down to 1.2% in 2014, compared to its earlier estimate of 1.8%. It blamed troubles overseas for slowing its export-driven output. France's economy is also struggling, and it faces record unemployment. But budget-conscious Germany is at odds with France about how to stimulate growth. On Wednesday, the French government presents its 2015 draft budget to European officials, who warn they may reject it since it foresees France missing the bloc's 3% budget deficit target for a second time. Even France's new Nobel Economics laureate, Jean Tirole, is calling for tougher measures to get the country back on its feet, including in these remarks on France 24 News Channel.
France has a lot of assets, and in a sense, that's a little bit sad that France is in some trouble right now. France, in my view, has to undergo some reforms, one of them being labor market reforms. We haven't succeeded in France to undertake the labor market reforms that are similar to those in Germany and Scandinavia and so on. We haven't succeeded also in downsizing the state.
European finance ministers also agreed on broad new measures to crack down on tax evasion that costs Europe an estimated $1.6 trillion a year. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Chaotic scenes unfolded on a major Hong Kong highway before dawn today as police tried to clear a new blockade that pro-democracy protesters had set up just hours earlier. VOA's Michael Lippin reports.
The early morning police operation resulted in the most violent confrontation between Hong Kong authorities and the protesters since the first night of the civil disobedience movement on September 28th. Well, that's when police fired tear gas and pepper spray and used batons against huge crowds that started occupying major city streets as part of a campaign to demand fully democratic elections in the Chinese territory. Now, since then, Hong Kong police had been largely restrained, allowing the protesters to remain in three protest sites while stepping in occasionally to break up confrontations between the Occupy activists and their opponents. But in recent days, police started clearing away some of the barricades at the three Occupy sites, saying they wanted to open several road lanes to traffic, but not attempting to remove all of the protesters. Now, late Tuesday, protesters, angered by the removal of part of their blockade in the Admiralty District, began expanding their Occupy site to a key road that they had not blocked before, laying down concrete slabs inside a tunnel. Let's have a listen. Well, the protesters were occupying Lung Wo Road, which is strategically important because it is a major Hong Kong island route to the Kowloon Peninsula via a tunnel under the harbor. Well, here's what one demonstrator had to say about why they were targeting that road.
Because this early morning, the Kam Chong Road, or the amateur road over that way, has been cleared by the police because of no reason. So in response to them, we therefore decide to block this Lung Wo Road so as to add pressure to the government.
Well, the occupiers initially overwhelmed the police, but at around 2 a.m., police reinforcements came in and started to forcibly remove that blockade. Some officers fired pepper spray at the demonstrators and dragged a number of them away to police vehicles. Here's what the confrontation sounded like. The local media reports indicate that the police succeeded in clearing the road before the start of the Wednesday morning rush hour. But the protesters remain on nearby streets and have vowed to stay until the government meets their demands. Now, Hong Kong's top officials have refused to negotiate with the demonstrators. They also have said there is almost no chance that their bosses in Beijing will accept the activists' demand for Hong Kong voters to be able to elect their own leader without restrictions on candidates. So the stalemate goes on.
That was VOA's Michael Lippin reporting. Hong Kong police are saying about 45 protesters were arrested early today and charged with illegal assembly. They also said at least two police officers were injured in the scuffles with the protesters. U.S. government reviewing the Hilton Company's planned sale of the famed Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City to a Chinese insurance company. Last week's deal totals nearly $2 billion. Waldorf Astoria has been home to U.S. envoys to the United Nations for more than 50 years. President Obama stays at the Waldorf Astoria when he's in town. State Department routinely warns U.S. diplomats in China about physical and electronic surveillance, tells American citizens in that country to be aware of similar risk, notably in hotels, that is. Sale for Hilton, well, they're going to continue to run that hotel for the next 100 years. Now that's a long time, isn't it? Huh? Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Wednesday.
This is Today in History. On October 15, 1529, Muslim forces under Commander Suleiman the Magnificent ended their siege of the heavily fortified Austrian city of Vienna. This marked the high water mark of the advance of the Ottoman Empire into Central Europe. On this date in 1815, French Emperor Napoleon began his exile on the British-held South Atlantic island of St. Helena. He was sent there after his defeat at Waterloo. Napoleon would remain on the island until his death in May of 1821. In 1894, French Captain Alfred Dreyfus, the highest-ranking Jewish officer in the French army, was arrested and charged with espionage and imprisoned on Devil's Island near French Guiana. The case rested on questionable evidence and was reopened in 1899. Dreyfus was reconvicted but later pardoned and publicly exonerated in 1906. Dreyfus went on to serve his country in World War I. In 1917, notorious World War I spy Mata Hari was executed as a German spy by a French firing squad. In 1964, it was announced that Nikita Khrushchev had been removed from his position as Premier and Secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. In 1990, on this day, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to ease Cold War tensions and reform the Soviet Union's communist government. In 2003, China launched its first manned space mission. The brief mission made China the third nation to launch a human being into space. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This fall marks the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. We live in a better world, said U.S. Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland, because the countries of Central Europe chose the path of a Europe whole, free, and at peace. But today, she warned, that choice is under threat, and Central Europe is once again on the front line in the fight to protect our security and our values. One of those threats is Russia's aggression in Ukraine. Most of Central Europe has responded with generous offers of assistance, security support, and even as Slovakia, Hungary, and Poland have done, reversed the flow of gas to help fill Ukraine's winter storage tanks. Most Central European countries have also been strong advocates for the sanctions placed on Russia. Ukraine is working hard to promote peace and change. It is fulfilling its commitment under the September 5th Minsk Agreement. It passed amnesty legislation and a special status law for the East, scheduled early local elections for December 7th, and is working with Russia to demarcate the special status zone. Now Russia and its proxies must do their part. Withdraw their forces and all the heavy weapons that have flooded the East, restore Ukrainian sovereignty, and withdraw heavy weapons on the international border. Allow robust OSCE monitoring of both sides of the border and return all of the hostages, notably Nadia Savchenko and Oleg Sentsov. Another threat to the region is ISIL, or the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. That's why nations of Central Europe are joining the global coalition to degrade and destroy ISIL's acts of terrorism, contributing to ammunition reserves, training, and humanitarian assistance. But more needs to be done to prevent ISIL recruitment and financing in the transatlantic region. While defending certain values abroad, the countries of Central Europe must be vigilant in preserving democratic values such as press freedom, civil society, and rule of law at home. As President Obama has said, the blessings of liberty must be earned and renewed by every generation, including our own. Echoing President Obama, Assistant Secretary Nuland commented that we must renew our commitment to our citizens and each other. We are stronger together, and many around the world who crave the same freedom we enjoy are depending on us.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.